You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
He's Brandon Staley, the Chargers head coach. He was with the Rams. He's been at a variety of places. He's been at Tennessee. He's been at Hutchinson Community College, John Carroll University, St. Thomas in Minnesota. And yes, you would have thought he would have ended up with the Chargers as the new head coach. He's Brandon Staley. Did I miss anything on the resume there, Brandon, of all your stops here?
Yeah, Northern Illinois, James Madison, and then, you know, Chicago, Denver. The list is long and distinguished.
If I would have told you when you were John Carroll 6 years ago, hey, you're going to be an NFL head coach, you would have said what?
I would have said that, you know, I believe that I could do it. I think, you know, that's the belief I had in myself. And I think the people that were with me at Carroll would verify that. But I think they would probably be the only people that would verify it in the world. And I understand that, you know, a lot of people, you know, needed Google to figure out, you know, just exactly who I was. But, you know, I think, you know, what I've tried to do is, you know, every opportunity that I've received is just try to, you know, prove myself. And hopefully with this opportunity, I'll be able to do the same thing.
And I don't know, it was probably 20 years ago. I'm at the University of Dayton. I see this 18-year-old freshman, and I'm in the communications building, and I saw Brandon Staley. I've never told this story. And he said he wanted to be in the media, and I said, son, you look like a football coach. And that was it. That was all I said to him, and I can now tell that story publicly. We did it, Brandon. We did it.
Yeah. I'm one of the few people that know, you know, your full name. I'm aware of like where it all began. And so, you know, like I said, Flyer pride.
We are UD. And he was also the starting quarterback. Who plays in the NFL the way you played at Dayton?
Oh, man. That's a good question, Dan. I would say maybe a little Baker Mayfield. You know, maybe a little Baker, because I wasn't, you know, wasn't the tallest guy, 6 footer mobility, but not like an elite athlete, but good enough. And, you know, competitor. I think Baker certainly throws it better than I did, but that could be a decent comp.
A better college quarterback. You were Sean McVay.
Brandon Staley. Sean McVay played receiver.
Oh, I thought he was a quarterback.
Yeah. High school option quarterback.
Okay.
He got moved to receiver.
Oh, okay, yeah. So then you were a better college quarterback than he was.
Of course, yeah.
How do you sell yourself in an interview to be the head coach? Because you do have to sell yourself, I'm guessing.
Well, I think, Dan, you got to be yourself, number one. And I think that, you know, so much about a head coaching interview is just expressing your vision for how you're going to lead a team. And I think that, you know, it's a difficult job because it requires a lot of different skill sets to be good at it. And I think what you got to try and do is share your vision for all the parts of the job, not just, you know, defense or offense or the kicking game, but, you know, how you're going to lead everybody in the building. You know, how are you going to connect, you know, to your players? How are you going to connect to fans? You know, how are you going to organize schedules, and how are you going to lead a team, you know, 365 days out of the year? And so, you know, that's why I've been working so hard throughout my whole life, because this has been my dream and I've been working towards it. And I think in that interview, I was able to express all the things that I've been working so hard for. And, you know, I was fortunate. That's what the Spanos family, Tom Telesco, Ed McGuire, that's what they were looking for. And it really, really fit well in the interview process.
But also being an offensive minded guy as a college quarterback, at what point do you make the shift to being a defensive minded coach?
Yeah, I think that my background, Dan, you know, as a quarterback has really, you know, I think sort of shaped the trajectory of my career as a defensive coach, because I think when you see the game through the lens of the quarterback, it's just going to change you, knowing that you're responsible for all 22 every single play, knowing, you know, the responsibility the quarterback has within the team, the locker room, you know, outside. I think, you know, my defensive philosophy has certainly been driven by my experiences as a quarterback and, you know, trying to make it tough on that position, because the reality is this is a quarterback league, and you look no further than the four teams that are playing right now. You have to be able to, you know, compete with these guys ultimately to be successful. And then when you're the head coach of a team, you know, you need to be able to help your quarterback, you know, become as good as he can be.
You interviewed for other jobs, right? Eagles, yeah. Texans.
That's correct.
Were you offered those jobs?
I was not. No, I this is the first opportunity that was offered to me. And this is the one we were shooting for. And it was such a great experience to go through that process. And I think it became clear to me and my family that this was the place that we were hoping would choose us.
And you don't have to move, do you?
Just right down the road. I know my wife, that's early Christmas present. I won husband of the year, you know, and didn't even really, you know, need to get to Christmas to do it. So, you know, we're off to a good start in this new year. And, you know, my family and I have really fallen in love with California and I, you know, in a short time and during a pandemic. So I can only imagine what this place is like when, you know, it'll be up and running. So we're so excited to be a part of the Southern California community.
We're talking to the new Chargers head coach, the pride of Perry, Ohio. He's Brandon Staley. Who do people say that you look like? You get mistaken for anybody?
You know, there have been some like Matt Leiner, Johnny Knoxville. You know, there have been some people that have kind of gone like that direction. You know,
I can see the Knoxville. I can see. And I also thought of Peter Brady from the Brady Bunch.
Not as familiar with Peter, but, you know, I'll have to look him up.
Yeah,
I think that those are a few that have been thrown at me, whether or not they're accurate. I don't know.
Johnny Knoxville, I can see that. I'm sure you have a personality that is nothing like Johnny Knoxville.
Well, I'd love to meet the guy. I know he's good at what he does. So I know I've watched a lot of his movies. So maybe we can connect at some point.
What was that first meeting with Justin Herbert like?
That's special, you know, on the way home after I call my family, you know, I really, you know, something that's important to me, Dan, is just reaching out to the guys and just being able to connect with him right away. And then yesterday on our way to the press conference, you know, we kind of FaceTime him, my wife and I, because, you know, I wanted him to share in this special day because, you know, he's at the front of everything that we're doing. And, you know, we got to really pour into him because he has so many special qualities that we're excited to get working with. And, you know, certainly one of the highlights of this opportunity. And with that comes great responsibility. So looking forward to getting started with Justin for sure.
Before I leave you or let you go, you got other important things to do. But I know cancer has played a role in your life. And if you could maybe deliver a message to this audience of what you've gone through, your parents have gone through, and sort of the importance of that. And even you singled out Shelly Smith, one of my good friends at the press conference who went through cancer and a wonderful reporter. And I don't know, it touched me that you singled out Shelly Smith with everything she's gone through, but you've certainly gone through some things yourself.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those moments. It was almost like my mother was, you know, kind of watching down on us. You know, both my parents had cancer. My dad just went through prostate cancer treatment in the fall. You know, thumbs up, you know, got a really good report. But my mom passed away when I was in college. She had breast cancer that turned into a lot of things for 9 years. And I saw a lot as a young guy growing up, and her strength, her grace, her resilience. And then when you go through it yourself, when you were actually feeling it, you know, I went through Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 24, and you do 6 months of chemotherapy, 6 weeks of radiation. When you come on the other side of it, there's just a strength. There's a confidence, there's a feeling that you can't really explain. And when I saw Shelly Smith, you know, when she was going through her treatment, you know, I grew up watching ESPN. I grew up watching you and Stewart and all those people there that made that so special. I was one of those gym rats, you know, studying all that I could and watching Shelly go through what she went through. I just saw a lot of the grace and that my mother had. And, you know, it was a really cool moment. And, you know, I think that if you see me here today, hopefully for any boy or girl growing up, going through something difficult, maybe it's not that, but something, you know, really challenging. If you come out on the other side of it, if you believe in yourself, that your dreams can come true.
Wait, if I would have said to you 5 years ago, do you want to be a Sports Center anchor or do you want to be a head coach? How about 20 years ago, if I said, do you want to be a Sports Center anchor or a head coach? What would you have said?
I'd say that I'd have a good chance at both. I'd say that whatever I put my mind to.
Easy here with the, had a good chance at both. I mean, it's hard. There's a lot of guys who coach the Chargers. There's very few people who can really do SportsCenter here, Brandon.
Well, I grew up, you know, getting, you know, coffee early and reading a sports page and then watching all of the SportsCenter reruns. That's when SportsCenter had the, you know, like that's what my brothers and I were doing. So, you and Stewart and everybody, I mean, we were those young kids that were reciting lines, like, you know, that we knew something. So, you know, just, I think we just grew up around the game, sports just in general. And so, I think all of it kind of led to this, and you know,
it's good.
Glad I took this path, because I wouldn't be nearly as you know, believable or watchable as you are.
Oh well, I understand that, but good luck with this. It's a great moment for you, and certainly a proud moment for all involved, including your family. We are UD, so take that same fighting spirit there that you would have had at Dayton, and bring it to the Chargers.
Thank you, Dan.
New head coach, the Chargers, Brandon Staley. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I don't know how many months ago it was, I said to Paulie, I think we should have tag team on the show.
You said we're due.
Yeah, we're due to have tag team on the show. And then all of a sudden I see them in the Geico commercial. Should have done it earlier, Paul.
My bad.
We'd have been ahead of everybody. Go the extra mile, very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win Fox Sports Radio's ultimate tailgate rig sweepstakes. To enter, get official rules, visit foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. By January 24th, Mercedes-Benz vans. Cecil DC, the Brian Supreme, Brain Supreme. Todd, you can't spell brain.
I misspelled it.
Steve Rock and Roll Gibson. They're known as a tag team. You see them in the Geico commercial. DC and Steve joining us on the program.
How you
guys,
doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us on the program. How wild has this ride been this month?
It's been fun. Really hasn't been a ride. We're used to it. We've been doing this forever, man. So we're just happy to be blessed and happy to continue on bringing happiness to everybody in the world.
Take me back to, what is the early 90s?
Mm-hmm.
And who came up with the idea for the song?
All right. So I heard you in before the break, and you got that totally wrong.
Wait, wait. Cinnamon was not involved in this, or chocolate?
Wait a minute. I'm going to tell you the story
now. Okay.
Back then, it was a popular saying, right? So it's kind of like lit it was, or any popular catchphrase. There are going to be a whole bunch of people that make songs about it, right?
Okay.
So in my situation, we used to say it at a club I used to work at as the DJ called Magic City in Atlanta, Georgia.
How are the right? wings?
The wings are wonderful.
That's what I thought.
So, you know, I remember, you know, we used to just party, and it was one day, it's called Midshift, around 7 p.m. It was Chocolate, Cinnamon, Dark and Lovely, Coco, Vogue, and several other girls. It just kind of erupted. And it just kept going, right? And we had been doing it, but I never paid attention to it. And then it just went on a night shift with Vanity, Sparkle, Tinkle. So you understand. So it's basically a party record in the club. The customers love it. The guys loved it. And I knew, being in the Southeast, we had to make something up tempo. So I went to Steve and tell him the rest, Steve.
He came to me and said, hey, we need to make a song called Whoomp, There It Is. I'm like, how do you spell it? And he told me how to spell it, right? And then after that, he told me, hey, man, it has to be a up-tempo track, some down south stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, man, we're from Denver. I don't know how to make that. He said, well, you're going to have to, man. He said, do it your way. And then from there, man, he told me, he said, hey, man, just remember Planet Rock and Egyptian Lover, Egypt, and all that type of stuff, just some up-tempo stuff, you know? And that's when I put the beat together, and we went to the studio, we laid it down, and shoot, the rest was history, man.
Okay, but when it's Whoop, There It Is, are the strippers taking off their clothes? Is that where it's...
Strippers are already naked. They're already naked. And see, back then, it wasn't about making it rain or throwing money. It was about who had the biggest garter belt. So if the girl's garter belt looked like an afro on their leg, that was the girl that had the most juice and had the most money. That's a historical fact.
Okay. I knew this, by the way.
Can we get off of this?
Wait, this is part of the story. This is what makes the story so
great. I don't know if Gackle's going to like this.
I think you're all set. When did you know you had something?
I left the studio, and it was on we mixed it down to a cassette tape. For all you youngins out there, a cassette tape was right after the 8-track tape, but before the CD, yeah. Right?
I used it in. Drum machines and samplers to make the
record. Yep, exactly.
Not a computer, not a laptop. Or,
yeah, exactly. You know. And yeah. I popped it in the tape because I was a DJ. I set up, popped it in, and I played it. And to this day, that is the biggest response I've had as a DJ on any record I've ever played. At least 10 to 15 people came and was like, man, what is that? And I knew, you know, and we had other songs and other songs done well. So I kind of sat on it for a while. I didn't really realize what I had. And then one of the girls was like, how come you don't play Whoop There It Is anymore? And I was like, I'll play it for you. And I played it again. And it was the same thing. And then one of the record reps, Alan Cole, was like, man, give me that. You know, I'm going to take that to New York and let them hear it. And then shopped it for a deal. And then we got with Bellmark Records. And I left Magic. I gave my 2 weeks in Magic City, left Freaknik 93. And a month and a half, we were platinum.
And it went platinum a few times. Steve, mm-hmm. When did you hear about maybe they wanted to do a commercial with you guys? Like, how did that come up?
Actually, they sent DC an email, and he sends me all the emails because he has our business account. So he sent me the email, and we discussed it, man, and said, hey, let's keep our mouth shut before we blow it. Because if you get to talking too much, you're going to blow it, man. And we agreed upon that, and everything happened for us, man, and yep. We're grateful for it.
How many takes?
Oh, man.
It was all day shoot. It was all day shoot. But it was cool for me because I'm an actor and a voice artist, right? So this was par for the course for me, right? But Steve can explain how it was for him.
Man, it was exhausting to me, man. When I went home, I went to sleep and slept all night like a baby, man. I was exhausted. We danced so much that day, man. It was like, oh man, I never danced that much, man.
Didn't even realize so
there's a million takes of it. Yeah,
I love the sprinkles.
You know what that's from, don't you? You know what that? You know what sport? That's from a sports. That's like a sports
icon.
Analogy, right? And you know when LeBron goes to the table before he comes in and does the chalk?
Yeah. Okay.
That's sprinkles.
That so you're giving a shout out to LeBron.
I'm giving a shout out to LeBron James because he inspired the sprinkles.
But cinnamon and chocolate sprinkles. Came up with they inspired the song.
And Vogue and Tinkle and Vanity and Dr. Lovely.
Is there a sequel in the works, Steve?
No, not right now. Yeah, man, we kind of, you know, hey, it should be more sequels, a lot more. Whoever wants to do them, let's do them. Yeah.
And you know what's great is you've got a younger generation. You got young mm-hmm. kids. You know, my guys, their kids, they just walk around and they probably don't even know that they're singing, you know, peanut butter cookie dough. But they're doing it. I mean, it's really catchy.
We're actually about to do a Scoop There It Is challenge.
Ooh.
Where everybody, you know, I've been getting a lot of videos where people record their babies in front of the TV, and then when the commercial goes off, the baby starts screaming and play it again. So they sit there rewinding it over and over and over again. The babies just don't even have to walk. Like, we've been baby's first step because of this commercial, because they find the way to get up on the TV and just start dancing. So we're about to do a Scoop There It Is challenge, and the winner, I don't know if I'm going to do some T-shirts, I'm going to do, I don't know what I'm going to do, but we're going to do something. So be on the lookout for the Scoop There It Is challenge.
No, it's great. It's fun. And
oh, yeah, definitely.
But don't you have the people in the background doing Kid and Play? Aren't they the parents?
Yeah, that's Nikki and
Anthony,
right? And I love that part because their Kid and Play is flawless. I was like, whoa.
Man, you know, all that stuff was really like impromptu, man. We just did it on the spot, man. So, yeah.
Can you give me a little taste here before I say goodbye?
Got the commercial?
No.
All right. Here we go. Party people! There you go.
Steve, I was waiting for you.
Oh, I'm taking it back to the old school.
Because I was going to kick in.
The old fool was so cool.
I was going to kick in there a little bit, you know.
You want to get down?
Oh, you know me.
Let me show you the way.
I went to Gold Club. I went to Gold Club in Atlanta, never Magic City.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I used to go to Gold Club, too.
Yeah.
We all used to go to Gold Club.
That's where I first met Portia and Cinnamon and Sprinkles and Tiffany to the main stage. To the main stage.
Strawberry.
Yeah.
For the top 10 for the Bob, no tip, no strip.
Hey, yes. Congrats, guys. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can see more with this. We appreciate your time.
We appreciate you inviting us.
All right, thank you, guys. That's tag team right there. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Just a quiet gentleman who was one of the great players of all time. And last time we had him on was in April. And coming up next hour, we will play that interview for you. Hopefully gives a little bit more of a context of who Hank was, what he was all about. And we had him on the anniversary of his 715th home run. And I have a poster that I have here in the man cave that It had all of Hank's home runs and the pitchers that he hit them off of. And it's back in one of the rooms in the back. In fact, our cameraman Weeks is going to go get that. And I remember at the end of the interview, and I think it's still going to be on the end of the interview, I said to Hank that I had this poster, and did he want it? And he said yes, that he had not seen it before. And it was put out by McGregor. And I had it in my office for years, never thinking that I would offer this up to Hank Aaron. And I forgot all about sending it to him. And I remember going back there a couple of weeks ago, and I go, I got to send this to Hank Aaron. And never got around to it. But I loved who he was. We're showing it. If you're watching on Peacock, it's Hank getting ready to unload on a fastball here, and has all of the pitchers that he hit home runs off of, the 715, but he ended up with, 755? Yeah, Paul.
I remember a bunch of years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, we had the great Senator John McCain of Arizona on our show. We had him many times, and you asked him who he considers the all-time home run king. He goes, oh, it's Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
He goes, Hank Aaron, I believe in. He said that.
Yeah. We've lost a lot of Hall of Famers in baseball the last year. A lot. And, you know, it's in my wheelhouse. These were players that I grew up watching. You know, when you have your baseball cards, when you go to see a game, you wanted to see these players. And Hank Aaron passing away at the age of 86. McLevin, have you seen the list of Hall of Famers who have passed away?
We'll get it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, 2020, most of it was.
Yeah, and the last
sort of this year too, and
Joe Morgan passing away. I mean, there's so many. Lou Brock, Tom Seaver, Whitey Ford passed away. It felt like there were about 15 Hall of Famers who passed away, and here we are coming up for the Hall of Fame voting. Don Sutton just passed away. Yeah, so we'll bring that back. You know, I don't want to be bummed out. Because I just hope Hank found peace? Because I always worried about that. You know, you're in the spotlight, and then all of a sudden you sort of drift away, and then you become an older man, an older person, and, you know, people aren't calling, people, you know, aren't as interested in you. And I felt very protective of Hank Aaron, because when he was going through the home run chase to surpass Babe Ruth, and he got all of this hate mail, and just the vitriol that people sent to Hank Aaron, who didn't ask for any of this. All he did is play baseball. He played it at a high level. There's nothing controversial about him. He wasn't mean, didn't say negative things. He was the quintessential professional when he stepped on the baseball field. And I remember a friend who saw some of the letters and just said, you can't imagine that another human being would write that to another human being. But through all of that, I hope he eventually found peace and enjoyment of being, and still in my mind, the all-time home run champ. Because he is. Scott in South Carolina. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to just paraphrase a Hank Aaron quote that really, I think, sums up who he was and why he was such a great role model, in addition to being one of the greatest players of all time. And again, I'm heavily paraphrasing, but he said, "It's great that people want to remember me for being a great ball player, but I'd rather they remember me for being a great person."
Yeah.
And that is just, I think, a profound statement. Thanks much.
Thank you, Scott. And really, we don't factor that in nowadays, but back then, like, you wanted to know your hero was a good guy, a good person. Whether they were or not, we didn't have that much access, and we didn't crave that salacious, you know, story or angle for somebody. Like, I didn't really care what Mickey Mantle was like off the baseball field or Joe Namath. It didn't matter to me. But I you know, if I did invest, like Johnny Bench was always one of my idols. I just thought Johnny Bench was who I thought he was. And there's just something to be said for that. Jerry West, one of my idols. You know, that who he was, who he is, you know. But, yeah, let's try to think positive things with Hank, because that's a great life, passing away at the age of 86. But we'll bring back that interview that we had back in April. Also, the Packers' former GM, Ted Thompson, passed away. Ted was responsible for a lot of great draft picks there in Green Bay, and including Aaron Rodgers. So Don Sutton, Ted Thompson, now Hank Aaron here in the last, 48 hours. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Let's bring in the Hall of Famer, Johnny Bench, who went toe-to-toe, I'm sure, with Hank quite a few times. And I don't know when you got the news, Johnny, but if I'm bringing it to you now, I apologize. But I thought you'd be a good person to have on.
Well, actually, Dan, I got all of a sudden a flood of text, and Henry, and with, you know, eyes that are crying, and it's... And I said, no, don't tell me this. I mean, I'm just absolutely worn out from this is our ninth person in a year, and within the year's time. And, you know, with Don Sutton and Losada, and I mean, Don I used to hang out with in Palm Springs. And then I thought, man, this is just getting too much. And then and I just sent a picture to Fritzy, and I hope he can pull it up. It's Hank sliding into me, and it's hanging on my wall here in my office. And Henry writes on it, "To John, I wish the hell you'd stay out of my way."
Were you behind the plate when Hank hit 714 off Jack Billingham?
Yeah, Jack still says I called the wrong pitch.
Wait, what did you call? Fastball?
I called a breaking ball, and I was there at I was standing on home plate when I shook Hank Aaron's hand too. Because when I broke in. And I'm catching, and Henry would come up, and, you know, I'd take off, put his bat down, he'd put his helmet on over his soft cap, and he would say, "Hi, John, how you doing?" And nobody ever knew that. And from the very beginning, I don't think there was a game that when the let off or when his first time at bat that he didn't say hello. And, I mean, it was such a reward just to be with the man and to be at the Hall of Fame with him and his gentleness, his class.
Yeah.
At the Gold Glove Awards. I mean, just anywhere you were with Hank. And we were trying to put together a Zoom call just recently, and it hadn't happened. And I'm so just sad and disappointed. I mean, you can't measure what we've lost in baseball this year. But he was just, you know, like I heard you talking about the flip of the wrists and everything else. And of course, he filled out. I mean, his forearms looked like my thighs. I mean, they were, you know, you wonder how the wrist and those forearms and everything else and hit off his front foot and just flicked it. And, I mean, it was, and, you know, 755 home runs. If you take those away, he still had 3,000 hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this, but, it, you know, but he was a great base stealer. He was a great defender. And he was just a better man and a better person. I mean, I'm just so sad. And, golly, it's just, and we can't do enough, you know, to say for him and what he did for baseball and what he meant to baseball, what he meant to everybody he played with. I can tell you, to a man, all those players were just with adulation and respect. And I don't think you can leave a better legacy than for us to talk about him in this kind of manner and say what a just a gentle person and what a wonderful person. And the all-time home run king to most people.
Yeah, I wondered about that, Johnny. Do you think the Hall of Famers view Hank as the all-time home run king?
Yeah. And I think it's just out of respect and everything else. I think everybody's always looking at the you know, the PEDs and the steroid era and whatever, and how much difference it would have made, and you know, and it I you know, it's sort of. But there's so many, there's just few people in your life that when you walk in to the Hall of Fame and you walk in or you walk into the hotel, and, you know, first time was Ted Williams, and there was Yogi, and there was Campanella, and here's Duke Snider, and, you know, here's all these guys, and there's Henry and Willie. And, I mean, it was just, it just gave credence. It gave validity to being in the Hall of Fame. I don't know that we will ever, you know, none of us will, you know, ever have that stature, I think, because it's, to me, if it will always be, that's what the Hall of Fame is. It's those people. It's, you know, what we dreamed of all our lives and hitting in the rocks out of the driveway and hitting, playing home run derby at the park. And, you know, the thing is, if you think about it, Dan, I don't know that there's anybody that's ever emulated hitting like Hank Aaron, because I don't think you can copy or emulate or perfect those things. He was one of a kind as a baseball player, and he's one of a kind as a person, and my whole being is sad.
Yeah, we lost Tom Seaver, we lost Lou Brock, we lost Joe Morgan, Bob Gibson, Don Sutton, now Hank Aaron.
Yeah, listen, Necro and Lasorda. Necro, I talked to him when he was on. I talked to him about once a week, and I don't know, but I tell you the story about Sparky calling me into the office one day, and he said, "John, we've got a chance to trade for Necro. What do you think?" And I said, "You better trade for his catcher too, because I'm not." And he always loved that. Nuxie was, I said, you know, he'd call me and I'd say, "Tell me a joke or I don't want to talk to you." And, of course, that was the one thing. And Lasorda was just the wizard on my baseball bunch. And
I got to put you in bubble wrap, all right? I got to make sure nothing happens to you.
Yeah, I'm, you know, and all of a sudden we start feeling so vulnerable. I mean, it's like, I mean, all of us, I guess, you know, to think that we're, you know, there and that. You know, I talked to Raleigh, I talked to Wade Boggs, I talked to Brett, and talked to Robin Yount the other day, and, you know, you just want to call and, you know, say, just, hey, I was just thinking about you. And
Get on that Zoom call with these guys who are still alive, Johnny.
Yeah.
Make sure you do it. Hey,
man, thank you,
buddy.
I appreciate it.
All right. That's Johnny Bench. And yeah, I appreciate him coming on. I could hear it in his voice. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.